Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. Today is Horticulture Day. I'm Charity Nebbe. We've had our first frost warnings and the end of the growing season is in sight. That also means the end of the lawn care season. But there are still a few things you might want to get taken care of before the snow flies. Turf grass specialist Adam Tomes is here today, assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Adam.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here. And of course, a lot of people wait throughout much of the year for the opportunity to seed or reseed their lawn. That window is quickly closing, right?
Yeah, we typically say to have all your seed in the ground by September 30th. And so, you know, that window's closing quickly. So I think with the temperatures in the next week, you know, you could extend that out, but I wouldn't extend it out too much farther than a week out.
All right. So do it this weekend is what I hear you saying.
Yes, definitely do it this weekend.
All right. And, you know, we're talking about turf grass, so the traditional grass lawn. If you are hoping to seed something else like prairie grass or put something else into your lawn, is now the time to do that as well?
Some of those grasses, you know, it kind of depends on what you're seeding. You know, prairies can be vastly different, but some of those you wait a little bit later in the year to seed and actually kind of do it at a dormant time.
All right.
Depending on what your mix is.
So do your homework and also hold your horses
A
little bit. This is also a time of year that a lot of people think about fertilizing their lawns. Tell me what people should be thinking about.
Yeah. You know, a lot of yards just need a shot of fertilizer to fill back in some of those bare spots that maybe aren't that bad. So the existing grass could just fill it in. And so a fertilizer application would be really good to help thicken the lawn along with a little aerification. And so typically this time of year, we're talking about applying, you know, 3/4 to 1 pound of nitrogen per 1,000 square feet and between now and the next month. And that would be good for the end of the fall.
All right. Well, let's talk. You mentioned a little aeration. My yard is like concrete right now, so a little aeration seems like a pretty tall order. How do we manage that given how dry things have been?
Yeah, that's really tough. You know, if you can go out and apply a little bit of water or catch a rain and then get your aeration machine on it right after that, that'll help. You know, if it's bone dry, you're not going to be able to, you know, poke any holes in the ground. Parts of the state, you know, have received a few rain showers in the last month that have kept the soil pretty good. So I aerated my yard last night. So, I mean, I know that central Iowa is pretty good right now. I know eastern Iowa is a little dry. So hopefully get the soil moisture to be a little bit wetter and then aeration to be good.
All right. And for people who do choose to fertilize their lawns, let's just review some of the guidelines to make sure that you're not also creating a runoff or pollution problems when you do that.
Yep. That's good things to review. So when we fertilize, we want to always try to pick a slow release fertilizer over a quick release. So something that's going to, you know, release the nutrients over time, so it's not a flush of growth or the potential that it would run off and end up in the waterways. So the other thing is when you get done fertilizing, make sure that you put the fertilizer, blow it off of the concrete, and so it's not on the hard surfaces. That's important as well.
For people who are concerned about weeds in their yard, is this a time of year that gives them opportunities to do some weed control as well?
Yeah, so this is a great point Cindy and I were actually talking about right before we came on air, and that's, you know, if you're debating on, I've got some bare spots, I've got some broadleaf weed control, what do I need to do? The crabgrass obviously is no longer an issue. That cold spell the other night wiped that out, so don't worry about crabgrass anymore. But, you know, if you're deciding on seeding versus spraying weeds, you're going to have to do one or the other this fall. You can't do both. So just realize that and do one or the other.
It has been a really dry year for much of the state, in spite of the recent rains in parts of the state. What are your concerns looking around at the lawns that you see? Do you feel like there was significant damage this year?
Yeah, there was, significant damage in parts of the state. A lot of it caught those September rains and were able to green back up and fill back in. And if we could just catch a couple more rains, they'd be in really good shape for next year. So I feel a lot better this fall than I did last fall as far as recovery from damage goes. And so I think we're in better shape than we were last year. Those yards, like specifically the Cedar Rapids area, Iowa City, they're still pretty dry and crispy. So I think those keep an eye on because they might need some seed in the spring.
When do you decide, how do you decide that your last time mowing is your last time, Adam?
Yep, that's the big debate everybody has. Typically, you'll start to see the grass growth slow. And, it's sometime in mid-October normally is when the grass will start slowing to grow and you really don't need to mow anymore. At that point, there's no point in spending the energy and the effort to do that.
Let's talk about leaves, because, of course, it is officially fall, and the leaves will start falling pretty soon. And I feel like there's been a real sea change over how we deal with leaves on our lawn in recent years. So tell me what you do on your lawn, Adam.
Yeah, so, leaves are one of those things that we don't rake those up anymore. We typically try to encourage people to mulch those into their yard and try to return them back in. That adds organic matter, that adds nutrients into the soil. And so that will help improve your soil over time if you can return those back in. And some people are choosing to leave spots in their yard where, the leaves can stay intact kind of as cover for some of the pollinators and things like that that might overwinter there.
Do you feel like this is catching on? I mean, I still do see people who rake their leaves into a pile and have them picked up by the city. But it also feels like the science on this is pretty clear about the fact that mulching up your leaves is beneficial, and it certainly seems easier.
Yeah, I think it's making a big shift for sure. No doubt some people still choose to, have the city pick them up. I still drive around and see lots of people raking them for the kids to mulch up to and mulch piles, which is great fun for the family.
Is that what that's called when the kids are jumping in the piles there? It's just manual mulching?
Right, manual mulching. Yep, for sure.
Are there situations where you would clear a lawn of leaves? Are there times when it still is the right thing to do in your mind?
Yeah, if you've got a newly seeded yard or a newly seeded area and you want that to fill in and establish, then that would be the time that you would want to definitely remove the leaf cover from there, because those young seedlings would get smothered out for the sunlight in the air. And so that would be the time you'd want to gently remove the leaves.
All right. And when we talk about mulching leaves, how do you do that? What's your best method?
Yeah, so I typically go out with my mower and I just mow across them and I mulch them up that way. I also have two young kids, so we do some of that manual mulching as well, though.
So do you try to, I don't know how many trees you have, but and when people have a lot of trees in a yard, and of course they've got leaves that fall at different times, do you wait till everything's fallen and then mulch those leaves with your mower, or is that something that you might want to keep up with?
No, you're going to want to try to keep up with that. One of the things with mulching is you want to make sure that the leaves are cut up small enough that they'd fall down into the profile of the canopy. And so, if you waited till the pile's a foot deep, you're going to have to mow over that several different directions and times to try to get them chopped up and spread out across the yard. So that's why we typically would say try to go out and mow at different time periods to try to help chop them up so it's not quite so much at once.
All right. We have a question about aeration, someone who has the same problem in their yard as I do. This is from Paula in Mason City, who says, given the drought, sadly, we are not going to aerate our rock hard lawn this fall. What are the ins and outs of spring aeration? We've never done it before in the spring.
Yeah, there's no real drawbacks to a spring aeration. Studies have showed that, you know, if you try to keep crabgrass out, aerating your yard in the spring is not going to change. You're not going to get more crabgrass because of that. So there's no negatives there. Sometimes it's a little bit slower recovery, just depending on how quickly the grass wakes up in the spring. It comes out of dormancy. That's probably the only thing, whereas right now it would actively grow to kind of fill back in. So.
And in the spring, I can imagine, I mean, right now our problem is that our yards are so hard that you can't possibly aerate them. But in the spring, things can get a little bit tricky with a whole lot of moisture. What's the right level of moisture for lawn aeration?
Yep. That is oftentimes a tricky balancing act, as the spring is our wettest season. And so it's one of those things that you'll go out and you definitely don't want to be doing more damage. So the machine shouldn't be sinking down into the ground. And so it's going to be kind of you're going to have to walk out in the yard and determine it. But normally it can handle quite a bit of moisture driving across it, and it won't hurt during aeration.
All right. You definitely, we've all probably erroneously done some damage with a mower if the lawn's been a little too soft. You have the same issues with aeration is what you're saying.
Yep. Same things there. So just make sure that, like, when you're pushing the aerator, that you don't see streaking of the tires or the machine, pushing water, something like that. That's too wet.
All right. If you wouldn't mow, you shouldn't aerate.
Exactly. Yep. That's very true.
Adam Tomes, Assistant Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. For more gardening information and tips, you can subscribe to our Garden Variety newsletter. You can find out more on our website, iowapublicradio.org/garden. I'm Charity Nebbe.
Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. I'm Charity Nebbe. It is Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join our conversation with your questions about all the things you'd like to grow or grow better. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Adam Tomes, Assistant Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University and Turf Grass Specialist. Cindy Haynes will be with us in just a moment, Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. And again, you can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. And Adam, before the break, we were talking about how incredibly dry it's been in some parts of the state. Should people be watering their lawn this time of year, or has that ship sailed?
Yeah, so that's a good question. It's one of those that we always say kind of midsummer, and the same would hold true now, and that's that, if you're going to water, commit to it and water as the growth slows. and just don't start and stop. And so, you know, if you were going to water and try to help it go into the fall a little better, over the next 2 to 3 weeks, I would water, and then I would just turn that back to little of nothing at watering at that point, because the grass will kind of be going into dormancy then.
You know, we've seen a movement in some places in the country where people are moving away from the more traditional lawns. I'm curious, within academia and studying turf grass, do you find that movement has reached academia, or is this something that's more anecdotal that we're seeing maybe on a neighborhood to neighborhood level?
No, there's definitely you know, more studies that are going out with kind of different mixtures of species and plants going into yards, things like that. The turf grass community on the research side is starting to do more and more of that as well. So they're trying to learn more about how to best manage that and figure out how it can all work together.
All right. Well, I'm sure we'll be talking a great deal more about that next spring as well. You can call our program with your questions, 866-780-9100. Cindy Haynes is on the line with me now. Hello, Cindy.
Good morning, Charity. How are you?
Very good. Thank you so much for being here. We've had a little bit of technical trouble this morning, so it's wonderful to have both Cindy and Adam on the air. And I've already got questions for you, Cindy. Here's one from Anne, who says, I have several houseplants that have been invaded by little gnats. I have repotted the plants, allowed the soil to dry out, used liquid insecticide, and have sticky traps all over. The infestation is still ongoing. What else can I try?
Anne has tried all of the things that we would recommend. If it's a fungus gnat, which is a little black fly that's flying around the soil, they like those conditions that are really moist. And now is the time when houseplants don't need as much water because their growth is starting to slow down as well. So the best thing to do is to keep up with those sticky traps and let them dry out a little bit more in between watering. A lot of the insecticides aren't going to work on a fungus gnat larvae, and there's nothing that a homeowner can purchase or apply that would kind of eliminate them without doing damage to your plants. So persistence is key. So just let them dry out a little bit in between waterings and keep those sticky traps and hope that catches a lot of them as they're flying around. And in another month or so, maybe you will see less.
All right. Nora,
not a good answer.
No. Yeah. But one you've given before, Cindy. So
yes.
Unfortunately. All right. Nora in Mason City has a couple of different questions. Is there anything that can be done to treat Japanese beetles now so you wouldn't have as many next year?
This would be a better question for an entomologist, but what I've heard the entomologists that I know say, like Donald Lewis, there's a lot of things that you can apply to the ground that would kill, like, the grub stage of certain beetles, but there's nothing really well targeted for Japanese beetles. Now's not the time to do it because those grubs aren't necessarily eating or ingesting that insecticide. And even if you did do this for Japanese beetles and you removed or eliminated all the grubs and Japanese beetle grubs in your lawn, your neighbor and his neighbor and your whole city would have to do it to eliminate Japanese beetles from coming to your area. So it's almost a waste of your time and money in even attempting to do it. Mm-hmm. Just spray for a really hard freeze. It's like a deep freeze. And then that usually does a much better, Mother Nature does a much better job of kind of taking care of that.
It does feel like when we have those polar vortex moments in the winter that we have fewer Japanese beetles the next summer, but I'm having a hard time hoping for that, Cindy.
I agree. So just hope that we have a couple of days and only a couple of days.
Oh, okay.
Maybe that will be. Okay.
All right. Her second question is easier, though. She says, I want to plant more bulb-type plants. Is it too late?
No, it's perfect timing. So this is the perfect, October's the perfect month to plant bulbs. So spring blooming bulbs. You can even get garlic. If you want to plant garlic now, that's a good time to do it too. So October's a great time because things are slowing down, but the soil is still warm. Plant the bulbs in October, and they actually will initiate some roots and be ready for blooms or whatever you have with them for next spring. So go get some tulips, go get some daffodils. That's a great activity to do this weekend.
All right, let's go to the phones. Richard is on the line in Fairfield. Hi, Richard.
Good morning, Charity. Hi. We are going to be seeding a new lawn, and we have been thinking about doing clover as an alternative. It seems to bind nitrogen and a lot less maintenance and, you know, good for the environment. And I know you just commented on alternatives, but I'm wondering about clover in particular.
Adam?
Yeah, that's a good question, Richard. I will say this. Clover is a good alternative. I would consider putting some grass in with it. Clover doesn't always handle the foot traffic very well. So if you have a dog or kids or you're just out in your yard a whole lot, that can kind of get overrun by foot traffic in high wear areas, and then you're kind of left with mud. And so some people that have put that in, you know, sometimes that's a complaint that they have, and we've seen that kind of in our research too. So consider mixing a little grass in, and then they can kind of feed off of each other as an option for you. So I hope that answers it.
And yeah, thanks. Would this be, you know, a good time? Clover is the same kind of season as seeding grass.
Adam, he's asking. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just thinking about it. I think it would be good to try to get some clover out right now as well and try to put it in with the grass. And try to get it up and going, and hopefully you'll get some rains that'll help.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call, Richard. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your question. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Nadia is on the line in Des Moines. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi, what's your
I question? Had a question. Parents have a 30-year-old walnut tree, and for some reason the branches at about the top one-third of the story of the tree are just breaking and falling off, like big branches, 4 inches of, you know, circumference kind of thing. And they wonder, they can't see anything wrong with it, but do you have any ideas?
There may not be anything wrong with it. Sometimes as trees get larger, the lower branches will sometimes just kind of fall off because they're not getting as much sunlight maybe as the others. It's just kind of a natural kind of shading effect. And yes, these are fairly large branches, which is a little bit concerning because you don't want to be underneath them when they're falling. But that having this happen occasionally does not mean that something is wrong. If you see a lot of them, that are doing this, or it's kind of scattered throughout the canopy, and it's a tree that you rely on for like shade or for fruit, it might be something worth having an arborist come out and take a look. So someone who actually can kind of climb up there and take a look and see if there's, you know, something wrong, maybe an insect pest, or there was some sort of damage that has caused some of these branches to kind of break off.
Okay.
I think that's what I would wait spring or maybe even this fall, if it's concerning, have an arborist come out and give a health check on your tree.
Will do. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Dennis is on the line in Marion. Hi, Dennis.
Hey, Dennis.
Yes.
What's your question?
Hello. Oh, we just planted sod this spring and was wondering how soon, if we could aerate this season, or should we wait till spring, or when that happens?
All right. So you planted sod in the spring, Adam?
Yep. It's going to kind of depend on how hard your underlying soil was. For the most part, you should be able to aerate this fall yet, and that'll really help the sod. So if your yard was really compacted when you laid the sod down, you may have some issues with it wanting to pull up as you aerify, but I would think since you planted it in the spring, it's had all summer to kind of root down, it should be fine to aerate.
All right, Dennis, thanks a lot for the call. Virginia's up next in Des Moines. Hi, Virginia.
Hello. I had to have an oak tree taken down earlier this year, and they chipped up, or I guess you'd say ground, the trunk, the chips, or the trunk that was left. Mm-hmm. Can I use those chips or ground oak for mulch?
Yes, you can use it for mulch. I would put it on a mulch somewhere like a vegetable garden or somewhere where there's not a whole bunch of plants that are growing right now. And I say that because sometimes freshly chipped mulch will tie up a little nitrogen for a little while as it kind of composts a little bit. So if you want to put it on a vegetable garden that after you've removed all the vegetables, that's a good thing to do because you're not planting again until spring. If you want to use it as a mulch maybe in your perennial garden right now, I would say maybe wait another month or two before you put it down, and put it down after a freeze so that it's not going to tie up any nitrogen, and for any of those plants that it might be a late season bloomer or that are still doing some growth here in the last month of the season.
Yeah. What about around trees?
At the base of the tree. Generally around trees. Yeah, it shouldn't be a big problem around trees either, especially if you've already mulched around those trees and you're adding, you know, another inch kind of on top. Shouldn't be a big deal because it'll, you know, they're starting to lose their leaves for deciduous trees anyway, so should be fine.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot for the call, Virginia. 866-780-9100. Mary's up next in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Mary.
Hi there. I did not cut my asparagus this year. It all went to seed. Is it, a lot of years I don't cut it down. I just let it winter through the winter, and in the spring I clean it up before the new stuff comes. Should I be cutting it down every year, or is that all right to leave it?
No, that's what most people do with their asparagus. You harvest what you need in the spring, and then by June you let it all kind of grow up and what we call fern, and we just let it photosynthesize and grow up as much as it can for the rest of the season. I don't cut mine back until sometime in March, when I can get out there to make sure remove it before the new spears are emerging. So, yeah, I wouldn't cut it back this time of year. I would wait until the ground is frozen and then cut it back if you want sometime in kind of late winter, early spring before the spears start to appear again.
Mary, thanks.
So you're doing the right thing.
All right, Mary, thanks a lot for the call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Next up, we've got Danielle in Woodward. Hi, Danielle.
Hi, good morning. We have ecograss on our lawn now, and it's we got it from Prairie Nursery, and I don't mow. Now, there are some broadleaf weeds, but the grass seems to be out competing them, so that if I feel like they're annoying, I can kind of hand pull them. And I do use a very lightweight Swedish scythe to trim along the driveway and where the hydrant is. So it's a really good product if you don't mind a lawn being a little bit higher. It's great to walk on barefoot. And my question is, foxtail, it's becoming more and more pervasive. My neighbor has a hay field of nothing but foxtail, and he bales it and sells it. It's invading everything, and I am uncertain how to best get rid of it and keep my grass.
That's a great question, Danielle. Adam, you want to tackle that?
Yeah, sure. So foxtail typically is a wonderful invader, especially in, you know, areas that there's openings in the plant canopy. Obviously, if your neighbor is baling it, there's a great seed bank right there for seeds to blow in. And so that's going to be a constant battle for you. Typically in a turf setting, we would say you could get a pre-emerge herbicide out to prevent it from moving in and try to thicken your turf canopy up as much as possible. I'm not 100% sure what's in your EcoGraph, I guess, to know if you could use a pre-emerge on it or what product to say as far as that goes.
Yeah, Danielle, give us some details.
Yeah, there's a lot of fescues, chewings, red, a couple of other fescues, and so they're rooting deeply. And I'm really pleased with how things look and how the whole sloped yard is stabilizing. And I understand foxtail does come up where there are some bare patches. We had a lot of damage to the yard when we had the derecho. We staged a lot of woodworking equipment in the yard, and in just 2 years, the bare spots are covering. Being covered by this eco grass, and the whole yard is stabilizing. So I think it's a great product. I did get some with an annual rye just to get that quick cover, but that rye is going away.
All right. Well, I'm so glad it's been successful. Danielle, thanks a lot for your call. We are going to have to take a short break. Adam, if you have something you want to add about that after the break, we can revisit the topic. But you are also welcome to join the conversation with your questions. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Adam Tomes, Assistant Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Cindy Haynes, Professor of Horticulture at ISU. This is Talk of Iowa.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Cindy Haynes, Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Adam Tomes, Turf Grass Specialist and Assistant Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. And we've got another lawn question for you here, Adam, from Brian, who wants to know if there's a good and easy way to get rid of just violets in his lawn.
No, those are some of the hardest to control weeds. If they're going to use a herbicide, I would get something with a good broadleaf herbicide, two or three modes of action, and spray it after the first frost. So we're talking in the window now, and be persistent about it. So maybe two applications this fall and then one in the spring, and that should hopefully get those under control. But there's no easy cure.
Right. And if you choose to embrace them, they're also edible, right, Cindy? We've talked about violets being one of the edible flowers you can enjoy.
They're fantastic on top of cupcakes, and you can decorate cakes with them. So, yes, they are an edible. So, but you don't want to eat them if you sprayed an herbicide or pesticide.
Very good point.
That's heavy. Yeah.
So you have to fully embrace them and stop trying to get rid of them if you're going to also eat the violets in your lawn.
Well, this is true. And you also have to realize that they're probably more prevalent in areas where there's lots of shade. So that's maybe you just have some areas that you let just go to violets and then have your lawn in the more sunny areas.
All right. Well, Daniel in Iowa City has quite the dream to talk to you about, Adam. Hi, Daniel.
Hi.
Tell us about your dream of a zero maintenance golf course.
Yeah, I've been wanting to build a golf course for decades, and but the main cost is the labor and the mowing. How close is the industry yet on inventing a grass that stays around 2 to 3 inches tall that you don't need to mow? I've thought of using, planting 80 acres of moss and of doing clover. And I see you had a previous caller say that your response was, hey, clover maybe gets trampled on and doesn't do so well. But I check in with the the yard centers every couple of years and ask them if there's anything on the horizon yet for a hybrid, a new hybrid that's not only no mowing but very low growth.
All right, Daniel, Adam, if you know the secret to this, you're going to be a very rich man.
So it's funny that you say that, Daniel. The breeders are coming up with more varieties that do more lateral growth than vertical. And the problem with those in the situation that you're describing is that if there's injury to the golf course, it can't heal back in. And so we need a certain amount of growth. We do have some test plots at the research farm that are very slow growing. The problem, again, with those is that if they're diseased or, you know, if they get drought during the summer, something like that, they just won't heal back in. And so the hope there is that, you know, we can find a happy medium where we can continue to try to have them fill laterally instead of growing up. And so they're working on it. I promise you that. We've made progress on it, and we'll continue to.
I'm sure you're not alone in dreaming this dream. I can imagine that would be hard with, like, divots in a golf course, too, if you have very slow-growing grass.
Yeah, that's a huge problem there, you know, especially if someone takes a divot or a ball mark on a putting green, that's going to damage the surface until it could heal back in. So that's why some growth is a good thing.
Did you like the 80 acres of moss idea? Is that?
Yeah, that's a interesting one. I've never thought about the fact that it could cover evenly across there. So I hadn't thought about that one much in that scale.
All right, Daniel, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go next to Cecile in Iowa City. Hi, Cecile.
Hi. I have an Annabelle hydrangea that has taken off and gotten way too big for the spot it's located in. Is it possible to divide it and to replant it, the cutoff part, somewhere in the yard now, or should I wait until spring? Or should I cut it at all?
Right. Yeah, you can. You can cut it back. This is one of those hydrangeas that kind of blooms on new growth, so you can cut it back. I wouldn't cut it back now. I wouldn't do anything to it right now. In the dormant season, you can cut it back quite a bit. I don't know how well it's going to be at dividing. Some shrubs will produce a lot of stems, and then there might be one or two stems that are kind of off to the side, like a lilac, you know, the suckers. And if you see that on the hydrangea, that's a great thing to kind of help divide it. But Annabelle tends to stay in one kind of big clump, which is, you know, pretty woody and pretty difficult to divide. It might be easier to try and take cuttings off of it and try and root cuttings instead of a division. But you can certainly...
Would I do that in the spring or now?
Would
I take the cuttings now or in the spring?
Yeah, you could try and take it now. My guess is summer cuttings are probably the easiest to root. So after, you know, that new spring growth and as they kind of firm up. But I might try a few cuttings just in a glass of water and see how it does, just kind of as a test case. You'd have to bring those in, and hopefully they would root over the fall, and then you'd have to pop them up and kind of store those kind of dormant cuttings in kind of a place that would keep them warm, but above cool, but above freezing. But yeah, you can cut back the plants to what you need to. You can cut them back even by half if you want during the dormant season. Maybe sometime in March, that would be a good time to do that, to kind of control the height and size of this particular Annabelle. Annabelle's tough, and it's a wonderful hydrangea to have. So I wouldn't mess with it too much because it's a nice one to have in your landscape. But yeah, sometimes you do need to kind of trim it back a little bit to control some height.
Cecile, thanks a lot for the call. We've got a question from Dave in Cedar Falls. He says, I seeded about 700 square feet of a new lawn. It has come up well, and I'm still watering regularly. There are a few small thin spots. Should I scratch some seeds into those spots now, or should I wait until spring?
No, I'd go ahead and scratch a little bit of seed in there. That'll just help speed up filling in.
All right. And another new grass question from Emily. How soon can I mow newly planted grass? It was planted in early September. Should I even mow it this fall?
Yeah, I would go ahead, set your mower at 4 inches or at 3 inches. And if the grass gets to 4 inches, go ahead and mow it and try to keep it at that through the fall. And that'll help kind of teach the plant that it needs to grow out instead of up. And so that should fill in quicker for you then.
All right, back to the phones. Linda in Waukee. Hi, Linda.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I have lots and lots of milkweed pods, but they're not bursting open. Why are they not bursting open?
All right, why aren't the milkweed pods bursting open yet, Cindy?
I'm not sure. I have seen a lot as well. Sometimes they just need to dry down a little bit more. So I'm wondering if, a rain has kind of prevented that. I've saw some milkweed pods that have some sooty mold on them. So maybe it's just been a little too humid or too wet. If you want to germinate them or you want to scatter these seeds, you can burst open a couple of them and see if they're dry enough to scatter or to germinate on your own. It will eventually happen, but it may just be another couple of weeks. Some of them may just be taking their time because maybe they got started a little bit later as well. I see plenty of pods out there, and I've checked a couple on the inside. There's plenty of seeds there, so I wouldn't worry too much just yet.
All right, so just give it a little more time. Linda, thank you for the call. Bill in Sac City has a question for you, Adam. He says, we have a yard with a lot of trees. Our yard serves as a leaf trap for leaves being blown in from the neighbor's trees, too. Consequently, we have a heavy fall leaf load. Is there a limit to the amount of mulch that we can add and not hurt the grass?
No, as long as the grass blades are still poking through the leaf litter that's being returned, there's not really a limit. If you can chop them up small enough and often enough, you're fine.
All right.
But so they have to poke up through.
Frequent trips with the mower might take care of it, right?
Yep.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Samir in Iowa City is on the line. Hi, Samir.
Hi.
Go ahead.
All right. Sorry. I have a couple plants or some plants that are warm weather plants that I have grown in a pot. I bring them inside in the winter, obviously late fall, winter, when temperature gets to be below 40 degrees outside in the nighttime. That one of them is the curry leaves and a couple other plants that none of them belong in this weather. But when I bring them in, I often run into this sticky sap that it develops during the winter time, normally towards the end of the winter, like December, January, or February. And when I bring them out, they're fine, of course. I bring them out sometime in April, May, depending on the weather. And then sometimes I also find those small white color flies that develop on them too.
All right, so
I do wash them.
Oh, go on.
Sure. I was going to say, I do wash them very nicely before bringing them in. I transition them through the garage. And when I do that, I wash them with the soapy water. But other than that, what else can I do to prevent that from happening every year?
Go ahead, Cindy.
So it sounds like they're treating these like houseplants and bringing them indoors. And that's wonderful. That's what they need. It sounds like you're doing the nice thing of washing them before you bring them indoors because you want to eliminate any kind of insects. We do have problems with insects indoors on some of our houseplants in the winter because it's a nice warm environment and these insect populations can explode just a little bit. You can wash them again indoors during the winter too with soapy water or maybe even an insecticidal soap, which is kind of like a soapy water as well. If you do this, you know, at least a couple of times during the winter, then maybe you're managing any populations that might be building before you take them back outside in the spring. So, and I think those white insects, those white flying insects or white flies, which are pretty common on houseplants and may require a couple more kind of washings to remove some of the eggs or the immature white flies to prevent that population explosion. So I don't know, Charity, I couldn't hear what the name of the plant was, but...
Yeah, Samir, I couldn't catch that either. Do you want to repeat the kind of plant?
Sure, that was curry leaves. You know, the curry leaves that is used in the spices. I don't know if you know what that is, but it's a warm weather plant, of course.
Right, right. So yeah, and this should be treated as a house plant and a little harder to wash because the leaves aren't big. But once again, I think just regular washing. And if you're using these for any kind of spicing or as an edible, then I would say just the soapy water more so than anything else as far as if you're kind of washing them regularly to kind of control instead of using even an insecticide of soap.
All right, Samir, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go next to Ian in Des Moines. Hi, Ian.
Hi. I have two quick questions for you. The first one, I have a ornamental tree in my backyard that's been kind of taken over by suckers. I removed all those suckers, and now I notice that the tree is rotting in the crotch, and it'll probably fall over in a good snowstorm. So I'm wondering if I were to remove the big trunk part of it and left one of the suckers, would I still have the same tree left over? Would it still use the same roots?
Yeah, it's probably, this sounds like a crabapple or an apple or something else that probably was grafted. And so the suckers are probably coming from the rootstock, which is pretty typical with certain ornamental trees. The problem is if you allow that rootstock to grow up, it may not look anything like that crabapple that you already have. So it may be a different color, it may be a different habit. It may not flower as well. So it's a little bit of a gamble. It's a little bit of a risk as to what you might actually get.
Okay.
So if you think the tree is a hazard tree or it's going to fall over or break apart, I might just suggest removing the whole thing and then next spring planting a new one instead of going with one of those suckers.
All right. And your second question really quickly, Ian.
Yep. Is it foolish to plant a cover crop inside of a flower bed?
Not necessarily. You just have to have a way to kind of terminate the cover crop before it reseeds. Otherwise, it just becomes a big weed area in a perennial bed that you might want other things to grow in that are already there.
All right. Well, and Linda's on the line with a very similar question. We only have about a minute left, so I'm going to see if we can broaden this a little bit. So if you do want to plant a cover crop on your small garden, is now the time to do that? And where would you get the seeds for that? I know that that's been problematic for some people because they can get a lot of seeds for a giant farm field, but not necessarily for a small garden plot.
Yeah, this is a really good question for Dr. Nair, because we talked about with this with vegetable gardens. You've got to find the right, there are some cover crops that you can plant now that you can terminate, you know, before early spring, but they've only got a month to grow. The biggest problem homeowners have is often finding the small quantity of seed that they need and not paying a fortune for them. So it's a lot of research on your part and a little bit on everyone else's too. So that's the challenges. If you can't find it and get it done soon, just mulch, put some compost on, and then do a little more research and maybe we can time it a little bit better for sowing that cover crop in September of next year.
All right. And maybe get together with members of a garden club to order yes. something big. All right. We are out of time, but Cindy Haynes, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Adam Tomes, thank you.
Thank you.
Cindy Haynes, professor of horticulture at Iowa State University, Adam Tomes, assistant professor of horticulture at ISU. This is Talk of Iowa from IPR News.